Accession number 18730, real one.
Jim Cox, real one. Where were you born, please?
Stallingborough, North Lincolnshire.
Which year was this?
That was in 1917.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Stallingborough?
Yes, I did, yes.
Which school did you go to?
Just the Church of England School. Nothing elaborate in those days.
How old were you when you left there?
14 years of age.
In 1931?
Yes.
Did you get a job when you left school?
Yes, I went, first of all, joined the old family business. My uncle was then running village carrier, if you know what that is, in those days, and right up to the Second World War. A lot of isolated villages just had originally horse-drawn wagon, and they went into town 2 or 3 days a week, you see, and collected and transported people, exchanged from one carrier to another to get out before buses, no buses on the go in those days. My uncle was then mechanised, he had a small lorry, and I started the day after I left school, I think, I started work with him on the old village carrier.
Is that what you were doing when war broke out?
Oh, no. I had left that. I went into the butchering trade and learnt my trade as a butcher. That was a very tedious job in those days. They were mostly family butchers who didn't like to see you go home at night. So you've got a lot of hours in, and I fell out with that after I'd learnt my trade. And I was working in Doncaster when the war broke out.
How did you come to join the army?
Well, that was after the BBC News told us that recruiting was open in the Brigade of Guards. It had been veritably impossible to volunteer for the British Army. For 6 weeks after the war broke out, because they were busy with the militia, the first lot of militia. And the guards were the first to open up recruiting. So I went along right away.
Was this in Doncaster?
In Doncaster. I went to the recruiting office the next morning.
What happened?
Well, I met the sergeant in the recruiting office who didn't appear to enjoy my company at all. What did I want, he said. I said, I want to join the Guards. Well, you needn't be coming here on a Saturday morning, he said. And I honestly gathered the opinion that he'd only gone in himself to get away from his wife's shopping trip. But anyway, he suggested I come back on the Monday morning when the Colonel would be there, who would was spending a Saturday playing golf. But on Monday morning, they entertained me. The office was then crowded with would-be volunteers, and you couldn't get a foot in the door. And I met another chap from Mexborough, who also wanted to join the Guards. And we couldn't get in the door. But these volunteers were all for the service corps and the engineers and medical corps. I did hear the sergeant in the finish. Where's those two chaps for the Guards? And believe me, we walked side by side down the centre of that room. Where those people got to, I don't know. They must have crept in the wall itself. But they didn't want to know about the Guards, and I began to think I was making a mistake. But anyway, I think the Colonel had won his game of golf on Saturday. He gave me a shilling and instructions to report at Caterham Barracks the next day.
And did you?
Yes, arrived at Caterham Barracks around tea time on the Tuesday. And I believe they told me there were over 3,000 from all parts of the country. There were at that time five regiments of foot guards in Caterham Barracks, and there were recruits for all regiments. And that rather took the guards by surprise, because they didn't know where to house us. And they ended up that night, they opened the big gymnasium up, tipped a load of blankets outside, and doled out one blanket each, and get in there, and kip down on the floor. And we jammed in, sleeping head to toe, packed like sardines. And I think you took your boots off, and every time you turned your head, you had a pair of size 10 stuck in your face. I think that chap next to me, he must have walked from Newcastle. But and then a nice boy, been brought up a bit better than most of us, asked the son, could they put the pyjamas on? Well, I often wonder if he tried to do what the sergeant told him to do with them pyjamas. Nevertheless, they sorted us out the next day. Quickly, as only guardsmen can, eh?
In what way do you mean?
Well, they'd got us all billets and found us and quickly moved out. Two regiments, I believe, the Scots and the Grenadiers moved out. Left the Welsh and the Irish, I believe, and the Coldstream in Caterham. Yeah, but quickly issued us with some kit. And I think I'd been there about 3 days. There were still recruits coming in. And we went down for supper one night. And it was a square of bread, a slice of bread, an inch chunk of cheese, and a mug of cocoa. And sat not far from me was a chap who's still in his blue serge suit, just come in that day, looking rather disdainfully at this supper. But for some reason, it wasn't usual for the picket officer to attend supper. But he did turn up that night, asked if there was any complaints. And this chap, he said yes. So the picket officer went along, he said, what's your trouble? Well, look at this, he said, what do you think I am, a bleeding mouse? And the picket officer ran up to it, he said, well, I don't know whether you're a mouse or not, but you're going in the hall. And of course the hall is the detention centre. But that chap did better than me first night in barracks. He got a room to himself.
What was the basic training like?
Well, we did 16 weeks guards training. The first 5 weeks you never saw the street at all. We didn't get out of barracks for 5 weeks. We were supposed to look like guardsmen by the time, but about 3 hours a day on the square, and PT and musketry. Yeah, it's pretty stiff for anyone that wasn't. I had been a manual worker, but anyone that hadn't, I think they found it fairly tough. Any clerical workers that hadn't kept themselves fit, it really hit them. But we got through that, and then went down to Purbright Camp for more genial training. Still did a bit of square bashing, but slowing us down from the early burly of the depot and making us, as one old RSM said, he taught us all he could, but now put some swank into it. If you can't swank in the guards, you don't make guardsmen. Yeah.
How did you like display in the guards?
Like what?
Display.
Display, oh yeah. Well, I got on with it fairly well because after the basic training, they wanted drivers, and so I'd been driving a couple of years before I went in there, and so I put my name down for drivers. We still had to do their MT course. I believe that lasted 3 weeks. Sorry. After that, I did a 3-week carrier course. And during this time, Dunkirk had occurred, and the battalions had arrived home, depleted in numbers, and wanted reinforcements. So all my mates that had trained with me went to make up these battalions. By the time I eventually got up to London, to the holding battalion, where they were still doing public duties, but of course in khaki suits now, not in scarlet, I was among these recruits that had been, the training had been cut down first to 12 weeks, then 8 weeks, then 6 weeks square batted. So when I got on the square with them, I was like a star in the sky for the RSM. He soon spotted me, and after calling me out front to do a demonstration to the others and stating that if I could do it, you all could do it, he dismissed me to my barrack room. Well, that was a famous old RSM who went by the name of Timmy Britton.
What was he like?
It was rather unusual for Timmy Britton to dismiss anyone because they didn't need training, didn't need practice. He was more likely to give you extra practice, but he did dismiss me that day. And of course, the NCOs, when we went on guard, and me, I was a star in their eyes. For a simple reason, I'd done far more training than the others. So I got let me see, would be one, two. Anyway, right-hand man on number one gate if you went to Buckingham Palace, and what he does, the rest of the sentries follow suit. If you do sentry go, they all do sentry go. When you stop, they stop, sort of thing. And then if it was took me at night, I'll be round the back, out of sight. A rather cushy number, that. So I got on quite well with the public duties business.
Which public duties did you like best, or like least?
Well, it didn't matter. I think the bank picket was a boring job in those days. I like Buckingham Palace. There was always plenty of people going past and that kind of thing. 2 hours seemed to fly to me, but other people didn't like it. It just one of those things.
Did the public ever cause any nuisance to the?
No. The public in those days were very good, but you could gamble nearly then when changing to the guard occurred that 50% of the public outside watching were in uniform, male or female, and one or two foreigners like coming in. Yeah.
So which battalion did you actually belong to?
Well, that was in the holding battalion in London, and I stayed with it more or less until the end of 42, nearly 3 years. 40, 41, 40, yeah. Nearly 3 years, they never got to... Because the war was static, wasn't it? The only faction we had was in the desert. We'd one battalion out there. They kept getting a draft of reinforcements, but I was never called on to go. So we stayed around in London. Then they... we went out to do a guard. My company went out to do a guard at Chequers to guard the Prime Minister. And when we arrived, there were bell tents under the trees outside, and did it rain? The rain fell down and the mud oozed up, and we didn't like the look of that. But we'd been there about 3 days when someone, who actually I don't know, asked the company commander if he could spare a man to assist him with house duties, because they were getting some big dinner parties and lunch parties then. And Mr. Churchill always had a crowd around, army officers and military aides and such like. And for some reason, and I don't know why, the company commander sent me in. Probably glad to see the back of me, I don't know, but I went in to do duties in the house, and numerous duties, looking after the central heating boilers, the hot water boilers. There were two of these, one for each system, and carting trays of food up from the kitchen to the dining room door. They never let me inside there, I thought to myself, now, I didn't like the mud up in the camp, so I bound the butler as quick as I could. I said, is there anywhere I could bring my blankets down? And I thought, in the boiler house would be a good place. But anyway, he lodged me in the bothy, which was an annex to the house, wherein there was a nice bed with beautiful white sheets, central heating, and hot water laid on. And so I kept there. This was class one army life, this. At the end of the month, the curator came along and presented me with a cheque for £250. And I also came in a RAF pilot, Spitfire pilot, I believe, who'd lost a leg during the Battle of Britain. And he only came at weekends, but he came to look after the spotters on the roof. And I was asked to valet for him. Well, that didn't take a lot of doing. And he paid me 10 shillings a week. And I still drew my army pay, so I thought I was on a better pay at that time than the RSM. And I lived in, got all my meals in the servants' hall. This was a cushy number, if you like. And
what were these spotters on the roof?
What were they?
Yes.
Well, some army spotters in those days, I suppose. I don't know what regiment or what they belonged.
What were they looking for?
Well, for German raiders, looking for the Prime Ministers to bomb him out, because, I mean, every dinner, every night, there were all the top ranks of Army, Navy and Air Force gathered for dinner and talks, and, because Mr. Churchill, he would talk till 2 o'clock in the morning before he'd retire. So one bomb on that lot would have been absolutely chaos, wouldn't it? Chaos enough without that at that time.
I think you met your wife when you were there, did you?
Yes, I did. The girl that was ladies' maid to Mrs. Churchill. And we got on fairly well from the off, like. Of course, when I went, there was the butler, and one handyman, and what, three? 7 or 8 females. Well, of course, being a young guardsman, you soon began to eye up flora of the fauna and picked this one girl, dated her, and I think I went straight with her for 41 years, 42, before she left me. And one little incident, Lady Soames, who was Mary Churchill at that time, and about the same age as my girl Lucy, they got on very well together, being the two of the same age. But she got a puppy, one of those little fancy puppies, I forget what they call it. And one day she's skipping down the corridor to the kitchens, I suppose, to beg titbits off the cook for her puppy dog. And I mistook her step for Lucy's, who I stood in an alcove. I stepped out, grabbed her by the waist, lifted her off her feet, and found out it was Mary Churchill. I quickly put her down, very embarrassed, but she laughed it off and thought it was very funny.
Did you explain why you had done it?
No. She laughed and galloped off, but when she got back upstairs, she did say to Lucy she'd been literally swept off her feet by a handsome guard. That were her words, not mine. And of course, Lucy explained, like, oh, yes, she said that we were just about engaged. And so she was very congratulatory and was a friend right up to the day my wife died. But she came up to Grimsby, oh, some 20 odd years after the war, I think. There were some houses converted into old people's homes, and they were to call them the Churchill Homes. And they asked Lady Soames to come up and open these houses. So my wife said, she would love to see Mary again. Well, then I said, we'll go see her. So she said, how can we go in there? Well, I said, we can go as far as they allow us. And then I said, you may see her, go by. When we arrived at these homes, there was no one about. And so we went up to the front door and stood in the porch. We could see a corridor straight through the house. And the Lord Mayor and all his corporation were showing Lady Soames round. Crossing the corridor from one room to another, she glanced our way. Immediately recognised us and left the Mayor and corporation standing and came and chatted for about 20 minutes. And there was nothing the poor Lord Mayor could do about it. He didn't even know who we were. But reminiscing about all the events that had occurred while we were at Chequers.
Which year were you at Chequers?
Which what?
Year.
That, 40, 41. I was there when... Now, what do they call this MP Winston Churchill today? He was Randolph's son, wouldn't he? And it would be his christening, and I was there at the time of his christening. I know the cook had made a cake somehow or other, although things, and it was all covered in chocolate, and I got a piece of that. Top it up. I didn't even have my own bed to make in those days. The housemaid ran it according to their custom, and a little chubby little housemaid used to come every day and make my bed. I thought this was life in the army. And during dinner, after I'd carted all the food up there, I'd also fill up, although it was central heating, all the rooms had open fire in, to fill in the coal scuttle things next to the fire. And this chubby little housemaid that made my bed, she used to have to come and sweep the hearth up and tidy up a bit. The head housekeeper, in the meantime, when Winston left his cigar butts about, they were generally about 3 inches long, she would collect them up and bring them to me to smoke in my pipe, which I'd always smoked. Tobacco was very scarce in those days, so they were very welcome. But this chubby little housemaid, the cheeky little devil, she would go one better if no one was looking. She'd knock one of Winston's cigars off the table, pick it up off the floor and say, "You can't expect Mr. Churchill to put that in his mouth now, can you?" And that was given to me to dispose of. So, I don't know if you ever missed them, but you got one of them into you at night, you didn't want to smoke all next day.
Did you do any divisional or brigade training in England before you left for abroad?
No, when they eventually sorted me out from Chequers, being A1, and I went back to London, and they were forming up, or they had formed then, an armoured car detachment, which had, forget what they were, but a cannon on the front and a machine gun. And these were, I believe, the only armoured vehicles in the defence of London, which someone thought at the War Office, I suppose, that parachutists may drop in Hyde Park, Wanstead Flats and Wimbledon Common and such like places. So we were in Albany Street Barracks, Regent's Park Barracks in Albany Street, and we trained in these armoured cars, dashing out, breakneck speed, right through London to various places where they, we did this practice. It's a wonder we didn't, with dispatch riders dashing past motorcyclists, stopping all the traffic. The police were well aware of us. They would step out and hold traffic up. We rather enjoyed it. We never killed anybody, which was a wonder. Because mad young soldiers with things, these 6-ton armoured cars that were capable of 60 mile an hour, and we went breakneck speed through, all over London. We were attached to that for quite a while until Hitler turned his armies to the east to attack Russia, and they decided the invasion was then not so evident, and we were we went out of London. We went up to Hatch End. They were forming a new brigade up there in the Pinner area, and we went attached to them more for training purposes than for anything else. We were there a while, until eventually I was on draft. But we arrived at, this was a country, a large country house we were billeted in, and there were 72 of us altogether. When we got there, there was all the kitchen utensils laid out. There were even rations in there. For how long, I don't know. And but no one had ever thought to send a cook. So it got to be about 3 o'clock in the afternoon when the senior sergeant came and asked me, he said, could I make a mug of tea for everybody? He said, when we're out on these exercises, which we